Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Jeanette Parker. I'm medical whistleblower, and I am coming to you live from Lawrence, Kansas. The topic for today's discussion is aerotoxic syndrome, which has to do with the inhalation of petrochemicals from the air regarding the contaminated cabin air in an aircraft. This term was first introduced in 1999 by Dr. Harry Hoffman, Professor Chris Winder, and Jean-Christophe Ballet. And it is the name given to an illness caused by long-term effects of breathing contaminated cabin air. I wanted to let you know that Medical Whistleblower is an advocacy group having to do with reporting medical issues, medical problems within the medical community. And we are advocates for those who report such problems, such as public health concerns like the aerotoxic syndrome, medical fraud, patient abuse and neglect, and human rights violations. We are still waiting for our guest host to check in with us today. We had arranged to have a man who is a pilot and is in charge of the Global Cabin Air Quality Executive Group. And it's one of the leading organizations representing air crew, pilots, cabin crew, and engineers that deals specifically with contaminated air issues and cabin air quality. Captain Tristan Loren is a former Boeing 757 and Boeing 767 captain. And since he hasn't yet come online, I will be talking for the first few minutes, at least, with a United Captain Dan Hanley, who is a former B-777 captain and a Federal Aviation whistleblower. Dan Hanley is a public spokesperson for a nationwide grassroots coalition of airline employees from all the airlines, and his purpose is to augment the Federal Aviation Administration in support of their mission in making our aerospace system in this country the safest, most efficient aerospace system in the world. And so, with no further ado, are you there, Dan?
Yes, Jeanette. Good morning. How are you this morning?
Yeah. Now, you have for several years known about this particular problem called aerotoxic syndrome, haven't you?
Well, I had some knowledge, limited actually, of this this situation. Tristan Loren contacted. He's a whistleblower of grand proportions in that he represents 500,000 airline employees that you had mentioned previously, and he contacted our association via our website. We have a contact us page at www.airline-whistleblowers.org, and asking our assistance if we could possibly get the word out to U.S. air crews and the media and Congress. And it was.
And passengers.
Oh, yes, of course. And I want to mention that also. And as we studied the literature and start looking into the global media coverage that this topic was receiving, including recently filed lawsuits in this country, we recognized that it was a very important health, but also an aviation safety issue that affects our special interests of our association. And those are the millions who travel by commercial air each day and those dedicated safety professionals who serve them, our air crew members. So once Tristan's group had contacted us, our association had already been in touch with Kate Hannay, and they just recently formed an umbrella organization that represents the concerns of the passengers. They group together all the passenger rights groups, and their new site, they don't have the website up, but that's airpassengersafety.org. And actually, we had hoped that Kate would be on the show today, but because of the Continental Airlines delay up in Minneapolis the other day, she was swamped with media concerns. So the other person on the show, Judith Morawski, she is the co-chair of the organization you just mentioned, Global Cabin Air Quality Executive Group. And by the way, their website address, for anyone that wants to tune into what they're doing here, is GCAQE.org. That's Global Cabin Air Quality Executive Group. And if you bring up that website, you'll see the work they're doing. And getting back to Kate Hannay, their group on September 22nd in Washington, D.C., they've scheduled a press conference, a national press conference with the media there to address their concerns regarding their legislation that's attached to the FAA reauthorization bill regarding passenger rights. And subsequent to the press conference, they've scheduled a room in the Russell Center office building, and they're going to bring in all the relevant congressional committee chairs, and they're going to have a panel discussion where each member of the group are going to be able to make a statement, and they'll have a question and answer session, and the media will be present in the room for that hearing also. So there's a synergy here with regard to what Kristen is going to address. And
Let's talk a little bit about how cabin air would even get contaminated. I mean, I understand that in order to maintain a comfortable environment and sufficient air pressure in the cabin, a supply of warm compressed air is required, and this is supplied from the engine. So it comes in through the engines, and it's in contact with moving parts that are lubricated. And so there's various engine seals in place which are designed to keep the lubricating oil of the engine and the air that's the intake air, separate. But these seals are not 100% effective, and so there can be some leakage of oil into the air. And is that your understanding?
Yes. Actually, they call that the event that occurs, and there could be a malfunction in the engine that would precipitate this, but it's called a fume event. And actually, the technology is in place where they could implement it to monitor the quality of air so that if one of these events occurs, people would recognize that. But the system you're talking about has been in place since the advent of jet engines, and they do use compressed air, and it does go through a recycling system where it not only maintains the pressurization of the aircraft, but the temperature of the air. So it's been around for a long time, but the studies that Judith and Tristan's group have been doing have been ongoing for 10 years, and the statistical data is all there to give proof to these events. However, you know, the politics does come into play, and this could be costly, and there are other legal ramifications to all of this. But having said that, if there is, this, the crux of the matter, I believe, is the problem has been identified, and it appears that neither Congress or the industry want to address it. And Tristan's group is trying to heighten public awareness and concern about the problem, and hopefully get Congress, who they're looking at it, to address the issue.
Now, because government statistics indicate like one flight in 2000 suffers a fume event, where this oil is mixed with very compressed air and makes this like a haze or smoke in the cabin.
That's correct. And what you just said, I believe, hit the nail on the head. Those are government statistics. And I don't know if Tristan's got his time off by an hour here. He obviously hasn't checked in. But that is one of the controversies here, in that the statistics being provided by their group begs to differ with the government statistics. So I'm not trying to steal Tristan's thunder. But, yes, that's the issue. And
now, there aren't any filters in the cabin air supply to stop this from happening?
Oh, yes, there is. And, see, I'm not well-versed enough to adequately address that issue, and that's why I was hoping Tristan would. But it also brings up this other issue with regard to air crew. And if they experience the devastating effects of one of these fume events and the airline doesn't acknowledge it, and that air crew member becomes incapacitated and winds up on sick list, then you start getting into workmen's compensation issues. And with no one admitting what the problem is, that person really is out of luck.
Someone like an air flight attendant or a passenger has been exposed to this toxic air, there might be a haze, but there's also maybe a smell. What would they say that smelled like?
You know, again, I'm going to have to defer to Tristan on that one, because I don't want to misstate anything here with regard to that. But going back briefly to what we've been discussing the last few weeks on the program, and for anyone who didn't happen to catch those, we were talking about the ability for air crew members, not just with these events, but perhaps with any safety issue that they would like to address to the company or the FAA. It's the employment of what Jeanette has talked about, the hostile work environment, forced psychiatric or medical evaluations that could result in the termination of an employee.
And that
could
be falsifying it, saying that the person doesn't actually have a problem when they do. Like, for example, this aerotoxic syndrome, there are many symptoms of that, and I understood I could go down through a few of them. Fatigue, blurred vision, shaking and tremors, vertigo, which is loss of balance, seizures, loss of consciousness even, memory impairment, headaches, ringing ears, diarrhea, nausea, confusion, dizziness, breathing difficulties, heart rate difficulties, irritation of eyes, nose, and airway.
Right. And actually, a lot of people say on a long flight, might attribute some of those symptoms to just jet lag. When they get off an airplane, feel very lethargic, maybe dizzy with the time change, and so they just pass it off. And I'm glad you brought it up, because, again, if you go to our web page, Outside Consultants, on our website, and scroll about halfway down the page, one of the sister organizations that Tristan has created an online questionnaire, and it's for airline crew, but passengers can also reference that. And it asks a series of questions, and all they're trying to do with that survey is develop further statistics to support their assertions on this situation.
Now, the fumes are sort of toxic, but the actual exposure might be undetectable. I mean, it could be very low levels of this in the air, so that one might not even see a haze or smell anything.
And that's exactly why they want to get the monitors in, because they're claiming that the technology is there to monitor air quality on board the airplane. That way, if there was a detectable fume event, and they wind, because they've had full airplane passenger loads that have gotten ill without bringing up an airline, if you go to Tristan's website, you'll see this is being globally reported, especially if you look at the news account since the beginning of the year. And imagine yourself walking off an airplane but not having talked to any of your other passengers, and you get deathly ill. Well, you would probably, or maybe think you've just got a bug or something. And that's what they're trying to do, is get this cross-communication. They're trying to gather statistics, bring media attention to it, and government attention to this, and also heighten crew and passenger awareness that this problem even exists.
Now, this complex synthetic oil that they use in fine engines, it contains many toxic ingredients, and as you know, oil can contain heavy metals and other things. But I understand that this particular oil used in jet engines, because jet engines are operating at a very high velocity, that they use an anti-wear agent that's organic phosphate called a tricrystal phosphate. And it's an organophosphate, and it has neurotoxic properties, just like nerve gas does. And that's one of the reasons why even very small, undetectable by odor amounts of this oil could be extremely dangerous to your health.
That's correct. And as a matter of fact, one of the individuals in Tristan's group is actually working towards a PhD in this whole topic, on this whole topic. And one of the other guests that we had hoped to be on the show today, and I understand she may have had a personal problem and will be joining us here a little bit later, is an industrial hygienist who has been working on this for years. So they've done extensive studies, and this actually, the topic aerotoxic syndrome was dubbed by, I believe, French and a few other scientists. So the research has been ongoing for many, many years, and it's making the news now, and hopefully people will take this seriously. And we're not trying to scare people off airplanes by bringing this forth, because it is a public health issue. And the other aspect that we haven't talked about here, Tristan actually is a producer director, and he put out a film, a documentary on this. And here's the, I talked that there was a public health and aviation safety issue, and the issue there is the possibility of a cockpit air crew having a fume event in flight, and imagine the devastating effects of both cockpit air members
on a pilot
on a flight with a two-man airplane, two pilots up there, and they both. So that's the aviation side of the house, or even the flight attendant crew in the back, because what those flight attendants are not put back there primarily to serve you food and beverages. They're put back there because they're aviation safety specialists in the event of an evacuation or an in-flight emergency. And there is a minimum crew complement required by federal law, the number of flight attendants based on the number of passenger seats in the airplane. And imagine if you have several of those flight attendants become ill in flight, you've actually lost I don't want to refer to them this way, but a big part of your safety equipment in the back of the airplane. So, yes, there are aviation safety issues here, and people, I don't believe, look at this from that perspective, but there's a whole broad range of issues that really need to be addressed, and that's why thank you so
now
much,
that we
Janet.
We could be looking at chronic exposure, very small amounts, as well as a single large exposure event.
That's correct.
So that crew on the airline are especially at risk.
That's correct. And that's what I was saying was the aviation safety issue. And actually, the Association of Flight Attendants, which is the largest airline union in the country. They represent, I believe, 54,000 flight attendants. I might be way off the mark on that number. They are really trying to push this issue with Congress and have been. So what we've done, we're working right now with that group as well as Tristan's group, which is a global organization, and also recently in our discussions with Kate Hannay, she was pretty much aware that the situation was out here, but her major focus has been on this Passenger Bill of Rights, which is attached to the FAA reauthorization bill to be voted on September 30th. But she is definitely concerned because their organization represents a million passengers out there flying.
Now, the very first case of this was actually a navigator incapacitated after breathing contaminated air in 1977. So this neurotoxic properties of this oil to be breathed into, inhaled into the lungs has been known about for a long time.
Right, right. And also, another group that has contacted our association, there's a Veterans Administration, I'm sorry, former veterans, air crew members, mm-hmm. who were flying military aircraft back in the first Gulf War and other instances. And when you look at their statistics, and they're asserting that it was the same controversy we're talking about here, there's this high level of incidence of cancer, and they're trying to approach the issue with the Veterans Administration. And again, because no one wants to acknowledge the possibility of that occurring, a lot of these men that served in uniform are being denied veterans benefits. And that could be a whole other topic, Jeanette, that you could bring a group of people on here and bring up.
Yeah, so cases are basically, they can go anywhere from mild cases where the effects of this flume event are reversible and resolve on their own, to more severe symptoms and neurological damage that could even be permanent damage and for which there was no cure.
Well, the one case I saw a video on, yes, it was very severe, and the woman definitely had neurological problems, tremors in her limbs. It's devastated her personal life and that of her family, which brings up the next topic sometime here in the not-too-distant future. Jeanette's kind enough to bring on some of the victims of aerotoxic syndrome and let them describe their own exposure and the resultant effects. And hopefully if Kate Hannay's life slows down with where she's going with this latest continental delay in Minneapolis, she'll be able to come on the program and listen firsthand to some of the people that have been exposed to this. On the other side, when you look at maintenance oversight of jet aircraft out there, each airline has an FAA principal operation inspector who oversees all aspects of airline operation. And as I mentioned on the last show, there are a number of FAA whistleblowers who have been suppressed the last 8 years. And consequently, they formed a group called the FAA Whistleblowers Alliance, and they're an affiliate of our organization, as are a number of other people, other organizations out there. And so we're integrating all of our individual issues, and this is a maintenance issue. And if there is a problem on that side of the house, and we have maintenance personnel who recognize it, but again, might be reluctant to come forward with what they are aware of out there, it goes right back to what we were talking about, the pressures being imposed out there, because, I mean, we're talking, excuse me, the potential of a big financial outlays, perhaps to correct the problem. But, you know, first the government and the industry has to acknowledge that this situation exists and that there is technology. Go ahead, Jeanette.
Well, a lot of independent studies have shown clear evidence of the link between contaminated cabin air and these chronic health problems. But I guess various governments and regulating authorities, although they've commissioned research, have claimed to not conclusively proven that link. So I guess corporate profit, conflicts of interest, and ineffective control by government of the industry continues to deny that there is a problem in this regard.
Well, it goes back to what we were saying last program. I mean, commercial airlines are a commercial enterprise, and they're out to make money, which they haven't the last 8 years for whatever reason, claiming high fuel prices and the economy were there right now. And there, yes, there is a major airline lobby in Washington, D.C., and yes, we both acknowledge that there's huge pressure on our politicians up there trying to work between the pressures from K Street and Wall Street. And while I don't want to use the word appeasing the public, but that is the pressure coming down from the other side because of what we were just talking about on the financials on this. So, and coupled with the ability of Air Crew to report it and their recognition even that they, because they got ill, and that brings up another issue that a lot of people don't recognize with regard to air crew members calling in sick on the job. Air crew members are allowed only so many hours of sick list, and they accumulate it over time. And some airlines, without mentioning any names, monitor the number of times an air crew member calls in sick. They keep tabs, and if it becomes excessive, and each airline has their own criteria for this, the air crew member can be called in and counseled or questioned with regard to their sick leave usage. And if it becomes excessive or outside whatever defined envelope, they can actually move to have the person go to a medical professional. So when you throw in this medical situation here that is genuine based on statistics and the reluctance of someone to use sick list or even report it, it complicates the whole issue. But again, it goes back, if someone did wind up out on, say, long-term disability because of this, the ability for them to collect workman's compensation, I mentioned before. So there's a lot of issues, and I know the Association of Flight Attendants is working hard to bring this to public light. Even though I was a pilot, I really haven't. I did, on behalf of the association, we did send a letter in just here recently to the president of the Airline Pilots Association, Captain John Prater, and his counterpart up in Canada, who's also a part of the Airline Pilots Association. And there was a list of several things in the letter that we were asking Captain Prater and ALPA to endorse, and one of them was this specific issue and the language contained in the bill regarding this toxic air, and we haven't received a response. But getting back to the whistleblowing issue, just this past week, I believe they met 2 hours a day in Washington, D.C., and a lot of it was, the meeting was precipitated by the Colgan air crash in Buffalo in February that killed everybody on board. But I know that there right now addressing this issue of safety reporting and whistleblower suppression and a whole host of other issues. But the concern of some there are the same organizations that might have possibly prevented certain things from happening in the past are the same group that are getting together to meet, beat up how to hash them out. So the jury's still out on what the final resolution is going to be, and I know Congress is rushing to pass through legislation in light of Colgan Air and some other issues. So until we see that final bill coming out, we won't know on that.
And of course, this is an international issue. We have pilots from England and pilots from Australia and pilots from all over the world, of course, concerned about this.
That's why people need to go to the website that I mentioned, gcaqe.org, and look at the number of news articles. I was astounded to read the number of reports that are being reported in the global media. And it's showing up in this country, but it's really astounding to look at these events. And it is coming to the limelight. And I'm sorry Judith had the personal problem this morning, and hopefully she'll be on. And I hope Tristan didn't miss his wake-up call here. But it looks like we still have a half hour left in the program here.
Read a couple of victims' testimonies in regards to the aerotoxic syndrome. We have both passengers and crew have indicated problems, and from all kinds of aircraft. I mean,
right.
We have.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We have information from even the traveling journalist who experienced problems on one of his flights in 2008. And I guess he had fumes poured into the cabin. The engine smelling the fumes, and his nose, eyes, and throat became dry and parched, and he had difficulty swallowing, and his lungs became painful, and everyone in the cabin were exposed. And he indicates in his statement how deboarded from the plane, he felt wobbly and had trouble walking and was confused and disoriented and so wobbly. Someone asked him if he was okay, and then he sat down in a wheelchair because they gave him a wheelchair because he couldn't walk. And that was right after deboarding from the plane. He saw paramedics, and he went to the hospital. When he finally got back home, he still had problems with his lungs being painful, and his breathing very, very difficult, and he finally went to a physician again and continued to have high blood pressure and pulse rate, and was hospitalized for several days, and then fatigue set in, and neurological problems started to happen, like migraines, loss of balance and coordination, visual disturbances. And so now he's dealing with a neurological problem that continues to plague his everyday life. And he has an aerosol inhaler for the painful breathing situation. And so he had long-term damages from the result of this. Originally he started off by going, his plans were to go to Europe and the Mediterranean. And he's a travel journalist, and so he flies very, very frequently.
And right, that's the case. Air transportation is an integral part of the global economy, and we're not trying to scare people off of airplanes because everyone pleasure travels and does the business travel. It's just that the situation exists out there in public awareness. We need to heighten public awareness. Kristen's group's trying to do that. As I said, the AFA is trying to do it. It is getting into the national media, but what you just cited there is just one of countless examples of what two other groups that I didn't bring up here, who are affiliated and working closely in the UK with Tristan and his group, are the Aerotoxic Association, and their website is aerotoxic.org. Captain John Hoyt, who runs that organization, is tentatively planned, as I understand, to be on the next show. He represents the victims of this, and he would like to bring on some of these victims and give first-hand accounts to people to share their story with, their tragic story with them. And then there's another organization in the UK also affiliated with the aforementioned toxiccabinair.com. And if you go, you can go to our website that I mentioned before, airline-whistleblowers.org, and that's the quickest access because all of these associations are listed there. Just click on the link and go to their site and read these accounts firsthand. So, yes, it's the news accounts of this, reading the specific examples of what's happened to people, it's a public health problem. But, again, I can't overemphasize the, even though cockpit crew members have quick donning oxygen masks up front, and the checklist calls for, if you have smoke in the cabin or anything, is to don those quick donning masks. So that would protect them in an obvious fume event, if they smell something possibly toxic in the air or a mist fills up the cabin, and they may not even have it in the cockpit, the mist, okay? But if they got a call from the back, from the flight attendants saying we have smoke in the back or there's something in the air, they can put these quick donning oxygen mask on in a nanosecond, and they have specific checklists for smoke or fumes. So that aspect of this safety issue is covered, and pilots know they're well trained on what to do in a situation like that. It's when perhaps the it's subtle, okay? Speaking of subtle, there's a procedure that is trained. It's called subtle incapacitation of a cockpit crew member. And I'll cite an example of, I'll go back to the incident of a few months ago where a captain actually had a heart attack in flight. And the first officer thought perhaps he had fallen asleep. But that procedure calls for moving the individual away from the controls of the airplane, obviously, in case he fell forward on the yoke and disconnected the autopilot. So pulling him back away from the controls, calling up a flight attendant, and then they move him out of the seat completely, and then they move on from there. I only saw the trailer on Tristan's movie, is the concern being both cockpit crew members becoming ill from a fume event in flight, where it isn't readily discernible that that's the case, because cockpit crew members eat their meals separately up there in case there was contaminated food. And contaminated air is another issue altogether. So I was hoping he'd come on. And if Tristan, for whatever reason, he's a very busy man doing a lot of things out there, if he doesn't check in with us before the end of the show, I hope he can come on a little bit later, perhaps with the next program, and address that issue, because this is one of the, him being a former British Airways 757 captain, and having done the in-depth studies that he has on this topic, he really needs to more specifically address that concern.
Well, we have a lot of good British information about toxic air, and there was a survey of pilots and crew that found alarming high levels of illnesses contracted since beginning to work for the airlines. And if I can go over those reports a little bit, these are 2009 statistics from Britain. One in seven of the 789 British Airlines staff surveyed had to take more than a month's sick leave in the previous year. One in 23 was diagnosed with cancer. And of one in 20 reported diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, and that is one way that toxic air syndrome can show up. The chronic fatigue syndrome generally in Britain, the amount that you would have would be about 1 in 1,000. So 1 in 20 as opposed to 1 in 1,000 is a great deal more than what would be expected in the normal population of British citizens. The scientists indicated that the toxins enter the cabin as a result of bleed air system used on the aircraft. Can you explain what bleed air is?
Sure. All your jet engines have a compressor. And I don't want to give an in-depth discussion of jet engines. It is basically the fan pulls the air into a multi-stage compressor that is super compressed, and then they go through this what is called a recycling machine that goes through compressions, expansions, and they deliver cabin conditioned air. And off the compressor section of the engine, which is the main part of the engine out there where it's being compressed, is where this air is bled off the engine via line. You know, they just pull it into these air recycling machines that, well, actually heats the air or delivers comfortable air to the cockpit. And that pulling air, compressed air off the engine in through the machine is how they get air from the engine. And where the possible contaminant, like I said, there is a filtering systems on this because it is coming off the engine. But if you have a some kind of a massive event on the engine.
I have Judith on the line, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Wonderful. Hello, Judith.
Hi, Judith. We're glad you're going to bail us out here.
We've been working on
trying to explain this. Now, Judith is an industrial hygienist and has been working in the area of health, specifically in regards to airline flights for almost 10 years. She's the co-chair of an international committee of crew member representatives, and she is actively working to address this problem, exposure to oil fumes. Do you want to say anything else about your credentials there, Judith?
No, I think you've covered it, but one point I'd like to make is that the air that's drawn into the cabin and flight deck is as Dan said, it comes off the engines. It's compressed in the engines, and sometimes in the compressor there are seals that keep the wet or the lubricated oily side of the compressor separate from the dry side of the compressor that comes into contact with the supply air. And sometimes those seals leak. Sometimes maintenance workers might overfill an oil reservoir. I mean, there are many ways that oil can contaminate the air supply system. But it happens regularly. We have documentation of it happening at least once a day on the U.S. fleet. That was data largely from the FAA over an 18-month period recently. And that's bound to be an underestimate, but that was documented events that the airlines documented with the FAA. But one important point is that there are no filtering systems on board. That air that comes into the cabin and flight deck from the engines is not filtered, and we're pushing for that air to be filtered. I think if your average passenger or crew member knew that the air was coming in off the engines, that the engines can and do leak oil sometimes, not on every flight, and that the oil gets heated to high temperature and contains some very toxic components, but that the air isn't filtered, I mean, it's absurd. You know, the technology is available now to filter that air before it's supplied to the cabin and flight deck so that crew members and passengers are not being exposed to these toxic oil fumes. But
now, it looks like I have my English persons on the phone here, so let me, I think I might have Tristan here. Is this Tristan?
Hi, how are you? How are you?
Is this Tristan?
It's Tristan, yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good, I got Tristan on the line.
You have the experts now, and I stand corrected on the filtering.
Oh, no. It, anybody would think that they should be filtered, but unfortunately they're not. The airlines are not required to do it, and the FAA has not done anything about it. The FAA has recognized that oil fumes can enter the cabin and flight deck, that when pilots are exposed, flight safety is compromised, but they have not required filtration, even after recognizing the flight safety impact.
Now I have two people from England, and let me get my second person on from England. Hello?
Hi, it's Susan Michaelis.
Oh, Susan, I'm glad that you're joining us. And if
you
will wait for one quick moment, I have another person on the line as well here from the United States. Hello, are you there?
You're talking to 978?
Yes.
Yeah, I am here.
And do you mind telling us who you are?
No, I'm Richard from Massachusetts. I work for an airline for 28 years. And,
oh, okay.
I have some valuable input to.
Go ahead.
We do have
Kristen and Susan Michaelis and all the experts on the line at this moment.
Well, I had a unique experience on an airplane in the late 80s. And what happened was I gave myself a little paper cut, a little stupid thing to do, but I went to the first aid kit, and I pulled the antiseptic out of it, and I found that it was methylate, which is a mercury product, and that's not allowed on any airplane in the world, period. And what bothered me more than that it was on the airplane was that the package of methylate was not intact. In other words, somebody had used some, which means that, maybe a few drops were dropped here and there. But my point is, and I went to my vice president and advised him about it, and I don't know if anything was done, but the methylate was removed from all airplanes on our airline. My point here is that a lot of people board these airplanes with mercury fillings. I don't know if you've ever sat beside somebody who had just terrible breath, but it's not actually terrible breath, it's toxic breath. And those vapors can make almost anybody sick, especially in an enclosed environment. So I would suggest that perhaps the A-line flight attendant could be supplied with a mercury, a Jerome Mercury vapor analyzer, or a vapor sniffer be placed on the outflow valve of every aircraft.
Well, let me put this through to the experts. Tristan, can you talk a little bit about cabin air quality for us?
Hello?
Tristan, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I just my signal fades in and out a bit.
You want to address the issue of cabin air for us?
I think I'm going to call back because I'm losing my signal. I'll ring back in 1 minute. Bye-bye.
Okay. Susan?
Yes, I could probably do that. The problem of Cabernet, as Judith has said, has been going on since the advent of the use of bleed air, which is 5 decades ago. And the air, as Judith said, is coming in through the engines and leaking into the cabin air supply. It's a maintenance problem and it's a design issue. And it's been deemed to be acceptable for passengers and crews to breathe this oil with their air. And what we're finding, and Judith, Tristan and I have been doing an awful lot of research, is that it's a huge flight safety problem. It's an extremely well-hidden problem, one that the airline industry does not want to deal with. And it's a huge problem for the health of all those exposed to this air. And we're finding that people are getting sick short-term as well as long-term. And my research is extremely troubling, and it's a major problem that has to be addressed.
And you're working to get this information out to the public? And is there a way that if the public feels, like this gentleman, feels that there's something not appropriate in the air quality of the cabin that they're sitting in, how can they identify that, and who should they report it to?
Well, it's a dirty sock type odor that most people would advise, and it happens at varying stages of flight, but we often hear about it on with aircraft sitting on the ground when they're warming up, getting ready for flight, aircraft taxiing around on the ground, preparing for takeoff, aircraft in the shortly after they've taken off, and particularly in the descent. It can happen at other times of flight, and often it's a fairly faint smell. It's not always extremely obvious, and if the air doesn't smell clean, it's not okay. It's not acceptable. And firstly, they should be telling the crew and advising that they think the air might be contaminated and asking for a report to be made. They should be advising, once taking down all details of the flight that they're on, they should be advising their medical practitioner, the airline that they've flown on. They should be calling the FAA and advising them that this has occurred. And Judith can probably give more details there, specifically in the United States. And they should be making sure that they can also write to their senators and let them know. But there is a passenger advocacy group that has been established worldwide to help address this issue, and that is Aerotoxic Association, and that's aerotoxic.org, and they're set up to help passengers deal with this because passengers are coming to them, and like my research is showing, and the crews are reporting, they're getting sick short-term and long-term. So this Aerotoxic association has been set up to help crews deal with this.
And Susan,
okay, Tristan, you want to add anything, Tristan?
Okay.
I don't think he's quite back on the line yet.
I think I have him on the line here. Tristan?
He's not there yet.
Susan?
Okay, please. Judith, can you add something?
I'd like to address the caller's comments. I fly every month. I'm sitting next to people with stinky breath pretty regularly. Nobody would argue that the quality of air on aircraft, independent of this oil fumes issue, is great. Certainly, there's room for improvement. But it's very different when you're talking about exposure to these oil fumes that can also contain carbon monoxide, that contain neurotoxic additives, that cause stomach cramping and muscle weakness and severe headaches, in some cases respiratory distress can be followed by tremors, balance problems, memory problems, significant neurological and respiratory symptoms that can be long-lasting. And so I think it's important to distinguish between a problem that's coming from the air supply system in terms of air quality that can be addressed with maintenance and design control measures, compared to the everyday
not enough ventilation, cabin may be too hot or too cold, person next to you has bad breath or maybe doing their nails or something like this. I mean, we're talking about serious neurological problems in many cases related to these oil fumes. And when these symptoms are acute, obviously the flight safety is compromised when the crew members are not able to perform their safety duties properly.
Okay, I do have a caller from England calling in here. Do you want to go live?
Yeah, hello. My name's Sue Dale, and I run the website that was conducting the health survey that you mentioned a little while ago.
Oh, good.
Hi. I just wondered if I could mention the website address because
go
really
right
like,
ahead. Go right ahead.
It's toxicfreeairlines.com, and we've got over 800 surveys now, and we'd really like some more from the U.S. so that we can see if this is, if our colleagues in the U.S. are suffering exactly the same illnesses as we are in the UK. So far, that seems to be the case.
Okay, and I have another caller here from England. Hello, go ahead.
Hello? Hi, Tristan. I just called back because I just had a
You
want
to wrap up? Or we got 4 minutes to go here, Tristan.
No, I think the sentiments that have been echoed by Judith and Susan are entirely accurate. The other angle to think about is that for an airline captain, which I was with British Airways, to be flying an airplane which has no form of warning system to warn me when the air is contaminated is absolutely amazing when you think about it. There's warnings to tell me if the cabin's too hot or too cold or what altitude the cabin's at or what height I'm at, but it doesn't tell me if the air is contaminated, which most houses have.
Well, that's a very important aspect of this.
Jeanette, we're going to do a follow-on program, and we're going to bring victims on, and I think it was a great idea. And Kate and I and my discussions with her she's been so involved with the passenger delay issues, which, as Judith or Susan brought up, is where a lot of these occur with an airplane sitting a long time on the ground. I think with your concurrence, maybe we could bring her on the program and we could get into a more in-depth discussion due to the fact that the guest checked in later, because there's so much more here that really people need to hear. And I'll shut up and let you wind up the program. Thank you.
And I have one more person here from another country. Come on. You're on the line.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. My name is Jim. I'm from the United States.
Oh,
I work in an environment that deals with these oils on a daily basis. We heat them to 350 degrees, and I feel that I have also suffered these same symptoms that they do in the cabins in midair.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, I only have 2 minutes remaining here, so I'm going to have to wrap up. I really appreciate all of you for calling in and being my guests on this show.
Thank you, Jeanette.
This is Dr. Jeanette Parker, and I am Medical Whistleblower, and we come to you live from Lawrence, Kansas, and we are an advocacy group in regards to medical problems that need to be reported. And we advocate for whistleblowers who bring forward and report to state, federal, and international authorities problems within our medical system or involving our public health. And does anyone have any last-minute statements you want to make or contact information?
If anybody would like to learn a bit more about the contaminated air issues, they can watch the documentary Welcome Aboard Toxic Airlines, which is available at welcomeaboardtoxicairlines.com.
Okay. Susan?
Yes, I would say that passengers need to start to learn about this issue, and it's a global scandal of which there's no shortage of information, and the airline industry, which is in complete denial, is rolling the dice and chancing it with people's health and their lives, and it is time that passengers started to demand clean air on aircraft.
Okay, and Judith?
Yeah, I would echo that sentiment, that we have incidents where the whole crew is taken to the emergency room, and some passengers are taken to the emergency room upon arrival because of oil fumes, and I'm quite sure that the airline is not providing them with the information that they need, and that needs to change. I'd also be interested to know what industry Jim works in. My email address is my first name, Judith, at afaseattle.org. That's Apple, Frank, Apple, Seattle.org. And thank you very much, Jeanette, for organizing the show.
Oh, thank you ever so much, everyone,
thank
for
you.
Being so cooperative and helping me with this. And this is a very important issue, and we will discuss it further. And this is Medical Whistleblower coming to you live from Lawrence, Kansas. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette.